program is being brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Hello and welcome to Spirit of Film Conversations. I'm your host, Randall Libero. And we're going to do something a little different. Usually I begin this program by talking about how movies and media are changing the way we think, live, relate, and dream. And we talk to media pioneers. And this week we have an author of a book that I think is extremely visionary in its approach in terms of talking about today's digital dharma. And that's the title of the book, and I really like that title. And we have with us the author of Digital Dharma, Stephen Vedrow. Stephen, hi. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Randall.
Stephen, just as you know, if you go to spiritoffilm.net, you can check out his bio, is a writer, lecturer, and nationally recognized telecommunications consultant who has been at the interface of new telecommunications technology and public service for the last 20 years. Stephen has a very interesting approach to this idea of what digital dharma represents, and he uses the term teleconsciousness, which I love languaging and all this new verbiage that people are creating, Stephen. So let me ask you, why did you feel the need to write digital dharma, and what was your main message in the book?
Well, there's really two parts of this. I mean, one is my own personal evolution. And I see it as kind of a left brain, right brain negotiation and hopefully a party. As you heard from the bio that you read, my background during the daytime was in technology and technology planning and science writing and journalism about communications technology. But like many of your listeners, on a personal level, I have spent 25 or more years on a personal spiritual quest, finding pathways into my own soul's purpose, including practices of meditation and initiation into a number of esoteric paths. And, you know, I found that as I got deeper and deeper in some of the esoteric writings about consciousness and about reality and about the levels of reality, that they started to line up better and better with my own experience in working with technologies. And in particular, this idea that if we believe that consciousness creates our realities and that there's a divine force or a unifying field of consciousness, that everything we do in the outer world is going to both reflect back to us and also be affected by our personal consciousness and mass consciousness sort of doing a dance together. And I know that's kind of the theme of your radio program in the sense of media not just as an external force, but media as a mirror of where we are in consciousness. And so I kind of pushed it past the idea of the story of the media to the underlying structures of the technologies we're inventing and argue in the book that the evolution of the structures of communication, when electricity was coupled with consciousness in the turn of the 19th century, that this kind of electrification of our consciousness gave us this opportunity to recreate or recapitulate the evolution of our own spiritual development. So I'm not saying that the technology gets us more spiritual. I'm saying that the technology, if we look at the technology through a mystic's eye, we can actually see the signposts of the global nervous system, the evolution of our global nervous system, paralleling the structures, the emotional issues, the psychological issues, the spiritual challenges of our own evolution.
I just wanted to read the introduction to your book where you start off, because it really kind of begins the journey of what you explore in Digital Dharma. And it talks about Dharma itself, and it says, Dharma is about our spiritual duty to find teachings in all aspects of daily life. Today, our souls are incarnated in bodies that swim in a sea of information. Our media are not outside our life, but are intimate extensions of our being. As extensions, they mirror and amplify both our soul's hunger for meaning and all of the obstacles we create on our path of consciousness evolution. And when I read that, I thought, I have to read this book. Just that introduction hooked me. And you start off with talking about the history of the growth of telecommunications from Alexander Graham Bell all the way through the Internet and beyond in this book. And so, and you kind of connect them with the energy centers of the body, and you explore the beginnings of our technology, which is in the late 1800s, where everything started to explode. If you think back in terms of our history, everyone who's listening, the telephone was only invented, what, in the late 1800s, and we've got this far in less than 200 years. And that to me is absolutely amazing. But at the same time, as Stephen postulates in the book, there's also been a shift in the growth of our understanding of ourselves in terms of our own consciousness. And I was thinking back into the 1960s, where I started to, you know, begin to understand some of these things as far as technological growth paralleling the expansion of, you know, spiritual consciousness, and where this happened cross-culturally. I remember when this whole idea of yoga, when I first started to understand what yoga is, I mean, I practice yoga, and that whole concept of, you know, I was into like the Beatles music, and they got involved with Maharishi, and then everyone was into doing yoga and, you know, transcendental meditation and all this other stuff. But really it was going on far before that, and right around the time of the development of the telephone and electricity and the phonograph. Stephen, kind of go back for us in history as sort of where we were in terms of consciousness, spiritual consciousness, at the beginning of the development of these, you know, these telecommunications inventions.
Well, you know, I want to always start with my disclaimer that I'm not saying the technology created spiritual consciousness. I think, as we would agree, the technology is an outer projection of the hunger of our evolution. And I look at the root of this is, as I said, from the kind of marriage of the power of electricity to the power of thought. And that really starts, of course, with the telegraph, which takes us really into the mid-19th century. And this explosion in what it did to consciousness, that people could actually send a thought, an idea, past the limits of their physical senses, past their ability to see and hear over distance. I mean, we had smoke signals and we had semaphore, but all of a sudden our ability was now instantaneous communication. And it really caused a psychic crisis in some ways, the growth of existentialism and who are we and what can we do. And it was coupled with this fascination then with, of course, picking up signals beyond that which we could see. And in fact, the early spiritualists who were really looking at soul issues from a very kind of concrete, you know, communication with the dead point of view, their first magazines or newsletters were called the Spiritual Telegraph. And of course, we all remember the movies and the stories of, you know, the table knockings and all of that. But think of that as a manifestation of this idea of, we now understand that our realities are bigger than what we think, and that with the appropriate devices we can begin to decode the signals coming to us from beyond our limited consciousness. And so the kind of awakening of our realization that the technology to send thought past the limits of the body started to interweave with mystical and esoteric communication really came about with this almost as soon as the telegraph was invented.
Well, right around that time period, there was also the beginning of the development of electricity, and I'm sure everyone kind of remembers Nikola Tesla, and he had a kind of a different approach to electricity, where it was actually broadcasting it through the airwaves, very similar to a lot of the, very much ahead of his time and similar to a lot of the wireless communications today. What do you think, just as a, I wanted to ask this question to you, and now I got you on the hot seat. What do you think would have been different in terms of our consciousness if Tesla's methodology were developed for electricity? What do you think would have happened? And the other question, the other side of that question is, why do you think it didn't happen?
Well, I think the answers, of course, are the same. I think that that consciousness has to evolve through stages of knowing. And that the idea of abundance, right? I mean, now we're going to talk about the abundance of the light.
Right.
Well, let's go right to the core spiritual moment when we as individuals make contact through whatever practices we're doing with the infinite divine. And we shift from the limitation of our incarnation, our limitation of our consciousness, to a moment's glimpse of unity. Right, so unity consciousness sort of being the goal of spiritual connection with the infinite of the divine. So here is a technology under Tesla's idea that he was going to basically pour energy out into the technosphere, into the environment, free and available to all. Well, I like to think of that as somebody offering LSD in the 1960s, why don't we just put it in the reservoirs and we'll all of a sudden be transcendent? Well, that could lead to tremendous dysfunction and paranoia and societal collapse as the investors realized with Tesla. They had to shut him down because consciousness wasn't ready. And I'm not saying that the people who shut him down had any idea of expanded consciousness. I'm only saying they were a product of their time and terrified that the idea of making power, think of the metaphor, of making power available to anyone without metering and without price would disrupt the entire capitalist system as we knew it.
Right,
so
right.
He was quite, he was quite a threat to the system on that practical level. But again, from a digital dharma point of view, from a metaphoric point of view, in a sense, he was offering a glimpse through this metaphor of putting electricity out for anyone to use with what mystics, of course, have experienced through intense practices. And mystics always tell you that you have to build the basic system before you jump into the experience of unity. And so we get into this evolutionary question. And I think that the case that I was trying to make with digital dharma was that if we kind of have an idea of the evolution of consciousness as taught to us by a number of great teachers, we can almost watch the evolution of our communication system in the same way, and that the transition from these different levels of communication technology, each one, as I weave through the book, is an evolutionary step up to a slightly higher or more complex way, not just of sending information, but a more complex way of communicating and being in connection with the other. And that evolution is something that has been predicted and talked to us through many paths, and including Maslow's hierarchy, including spiral dynamics, including a lot of Ken Wilber's work, and including the evolution of the chakra system.
Well, the first chapter, which you talk about, first level digital dharma, is a telegraph of aliveness, and the second chapter begins with the second level digital dharma, which is reach out and touch someone. We're talking about now the second chakra energy, and this is about relationship. And I've noticed that really we can see that happening in terms of, say, today's everyone texting each other. people are looking out and reaching out across the internet through this texting that I'm seeing going on all the time. And they're looking for a connection, and social media and the growth of the social media websites that are prominent right now, such as Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. And this whole idea of looking to connect with each other, and that longing to connect not only with another human being, but I think, as posed by your book, with the divine, as we're reaching out and talking, you know, to someone through either texting or even on the cell phone. I came across an interesting article recently about people's use of the cell phone and the aspect of when you're speaking with someone, a part of your brain is actually in this sort of space, which is not in a, you know, you're not, you sort of lose a part of your awareness of your physical surroundings, and you're sort of imagining that person who you're talking to in some form, and it's sort of a, made to be kind of a quantum kind of a thing. And I've noticed that you roll a story out in your book where some guy's talking on the phone to somebody, and he walks out into oncoming traffic, and not even noticing the oncoming traffic, he sees it doesn't register in his brain. So there are some drawbacks to talking on the cell phone, and I've interviewed Dr. Joe Dispenza on this program. We talked about what's going on in the brain when you're watching a movie and consuming media. So what Stephen, I just kind of want to jump into this just for a second, because although we're reaching out to each other through relationship, there's, in the use of the technology and the way that we interact with it physiologically and neurologically, what do you see as some of the aspects that people should be aware of when they're using things like cell phones or talking through computers and in the ignorance of their surroundings?
Well, that's a very good question. And, you know, you referenced at the beginning the phenomena, of both texting and constant cell phone calling. And, you know, I argue in my book that texting in particular is really a first chakra telegraph of aliveness, and that fascination with texting is very much kind of that level of here I am, where am I, where are you, what are you doing? Whereas the telephone connection, the voice in the ear, as you just described, takes us into actually infantile dream space, where we're listening to the sound of the mother from the being within the womb, or at least at the level of infant being cradled, and that our connection to the telephone has always had this intense, both sexual and also childish, kind of intimate hunger associated with it, and why people, when they're on the phone, can do these dreamlike things or reveal their most intimate secrets in the midst of a subway car, because they're not even conscious that anyone's really around them. And so the technologies, taking back to the energy body and the psychological and physiological bodies, in my book I use the metaphor of the chakra system. And whether one believes in the physical existence of the chakras, that's a separate program. You know, I'm quite happy to have a conversation with someone who doesn't want to believe in the chakras. And simply say, think of the chakras as stages of our physiological awareness and what happens. So first chakra is really about being, coming into aliveness, coming into presence, coming into being, and our hunger at that level is to both send out a message of here I am to the world, and the hunger to get something back. Where a second chakra communication, which I connect with the telephone, about relationship, of course, is the harmonic with someone else, the rise and fall of relationship. And so the archetypical story of the invention of the telegraph, is Samuel Morse sent the first message, which is, what hath God wrought? which is this expression of wonder at creation and creativity. And the apocryphal message that Alexander Bell sent, which has been challenged in recent history, is, Mr. Watson, come here, I need you, right? So a different, a message of relationship, a message of need, a message of connection. And that we're replicating that in some ways in our use of both the texting and the telephone as first and second chakra technologies. But then as we move up in the chakra system, or we move up in our spiritual development and our work, we first go from aliveness, we go from aliveness to relationship, and then we move into who we are in relation to others. And that's really around the third, fourth, to some degree the fifth chakra. And those issues of relationship, both the light and the shadow of those relationships, I believe we play out in third, fourth, and fifth level communications, which is radio, television, and the internet.
And we'll get to the internet in just a second here, but I want to continue with this idea of texting.
Sure.
You mentioned Howard Rheingold in his book Smart Moms, which I read some time ago, and it's about using smart message devices, be able to do things like political activism. And you brought up, the ideas you said in your book, if television helped bring down the Berlin Wall and the fact machine helped protesters organize during the Tiananmen Square protests, cell phone text messaging, also known as SMS, may be the new political tool for activists. The ability for people to communicate with each other instantaneously in different parts of the world through cell phone usage and now, of course, the internet and blogging, this is a whole new level of connection because people who – now it's cross-cultural. I mean, it's not just that, people that I know in my circle or down the street or that I know at work or at school or whatever. We're talking about people on the other side of the planet who have intimate connections with. And I really like the idea that you pose that these type of connections are really dropping political boundaries, sociological boundaries, and they're allowing people to connect with other people in other countries who they have no experience of their daily life and what they go through, but they're brought together under an idea or an ideology. Talk a little bit about sort of where you think this may go to and how it may affect the future political processes in different countries.
Well, the transition of what you're describing, of creating a global a global network through the internet, through text messaging and like social networking. I argue, of course, that archetypically that's at the fifth chakra. That's the chakra of communication, the chakra of speech, and the chakra of networks and creating a grid and changing us from our relationship to the other in our local world, which was radio and television and one-to-many kind of broadcasting, into this fifth-level awareness, which is that everything that I do impacts others and everything others do impact me. And it is truly a shift in consciousness. I mean, we had that view of the Earth from space that kind of was the transition in the 70s to the idea of spaceship Earth, and now we're building the communication system that allows a blogger in Iraq to talk to us, to allow someone in Iran to describe, through cell phone messaging exactly what's going on. So in one way, these things create for us a web of connection. Now, the positive side is that's, again, part of our soul's longing is to return to some form of unity connection, ideally with the divine, but part of that step is within our communities and within our world. The downside, of course, is that if we're not prepared, we don't have appropriate filters and we don't have appropriate wisdom, these connections can be overwhelming and can be addictive, can be cause people to actually drop into isolation because there's too much to deal with. And so it's a real challenge for us right now with the Earth becoming smaller both electronically, and I would say that metaphor is operative in the physical domain. Think about what we're facing now in terms of the metaphor of contagion. HIV, swine flu, Ebola, H1N1, all of these things are about a world where everybody's on top of each other. So we're in this place now where we can't hide anymore behind our walls of physical security. Our boundaries are being broken all the time, from the borders to our health boundaries, and our psychic boundaries as well through these systems of communication. communication. So there's a shadow quality to it, but there's also this incredible opportunity to break out of our false separation of our ego selves into truly living and understanding that which the Christ and all the great teachers have taught us about. The other is really ourselves, seen through a different set of eyes. And so I think that we're at a very exciting time because we are actually being challenged to break down the false separation that we had with nationalism, that we had with cultural differences, and to begin to really understand that that I and the other are the same. And that's a very radical leap.
Well, you just mentioned the idea of this growth of social impact of the internet connectivity, and I want to read from the fifth level Digital Dharma, chapter 5, where on, it's page 100, where you say, pondering the immense social impact of internet connectivity presents parallel lessons for one's personal inner life. Fifth level Dharma asks us to live with a transparent heart in an overwhelming diverse world. This manner of living requires appropriate energetic filters to keep out unwanted negative signals, just as in the electronic world, where we have our TiVos and caller ID, air filters, the V-chip, noise-canceling headphones, and so forth. In a world where transparency brings not the one big truth, but in Gibson's words, deliriously multiple viewpoints shot through with misinformation, disinformation, conspiracy theories, and a quotidian degree of madness, we need to cultivate the fifth chakra power of discernment. And I want to get into that in just a second. Continuing, on the internet, as in all communications, appropriate and healthy interfaces between medium and message, between the expanding universe of information producers and one's inner consciousness are required. This means practicing the Buddhist art of mindfulness, both conscious attention and conscious inattention. Now, you talk about this aspect of, as we are living in this, we're soaking in the sea of media, of practicing the idea of discernment. This is something that the Dalai Lama talks about using the aspect of attention or inattention. What do you see as some of the tools that people can start to use in their daily lives to be able to tune out, you know, and sort of bring themselves back to a center point where they're discerning their choices in the use of media? And I've talked about this many times on the show before, where they use their time and create their, a preciousness around their use of media time, whether it's movies or TV or texting or cell phone talking. What do you recommend as some of the things that people can do besides like meditation? And, you know, when someone's out in the buzz of what's going on, would you recommend things like centering, breathing, you know, using those yogic techniques?
Well, I was chuckling as you were saying this because I remembered your intro, and of course you talked about yoga practice. Mm-hmm. And Digital Dharma, you know, out in the, we have the Dharma, which is the school, and then we have the Sangha, which is our community, and we have our practices, right? So anyone who has done any form of practice, I like to do breath work, and particular figure eight breathing of grounding myself, you know, through my feet into the earth and grounding myself solarly, I guess, through my crown to the universe, and remembering that I have boundaries and to actually practice awareness of my energy field. And then from that place, you know, set an intention that I'm protected, I'm surrounded by light, and then be able indeed to operate simultaneously on the level of what is it that I need to do right now in this communication, and at the other time to have some awareness that this is all still a dream, right? This is all still data that's pouring in on me, but I have some control over the direction that it's coming from and how I'm going to respond to it. So step one that I try to argue in the book is to first wake up and see that all of these technologies, this sea of memes that we're floating in, this deluge of information, is in some ways a signpost or an opportunity for us to understand something about ourselves and our own hearts and our own desires. And so it's not something that's totally outside of ourselves that we're powerless and passive and we react to, but it is something that we're co-creating with others as a reflection of our goals and desires of connection. So step one is to just understand that this media isn't invisible, is a physical thing, is something we're creating, is something we can relate to beyond just being hooked to it. And I know that's what you do in the program, right? And people, you want people to have some consciousness of their experience. And then in terms of exercise, as I say, I find breath work, intention, and some of it is simply body awareness, being conscious that television, for example, really plays into the heart chakra and plays into emotional dependency and emotional hunger for connection, and understanding that the buzz of the BlackBerry and text messaging plays, you know, both in the fifth chakra and also in, the, in being grounded. And so playing with the idea of the chakras gives us a chance to ask ourselves, well, where am I physically feeling this communication? And that very act, again, takes us into observer role. And of course, the observer role is the place from which mindfulness and all of the other practices can take place.
Right. I was looking at the end of the chapter on the Internet, and you mentioned a couple of things like when people are surfing the Internet, what to be aware of. And these are, I think, really good recommendations. As you imagine that you're just surfing the Internet looking for information, like searching what's going on in terms of the news and things like that. And you said, each time you go online, ask, what is the truth here? And whose truth is it? And then ask yourself, how do I decide what and whom to trust? And that's, I think, a really good barometer of going across, especially news sites. And you also say, when you encounter a questionable site, perhaps dishonest or based in fear or hate, center yourself and send love to its creators. Visualize their true faces behind the aliases and net names. See the light in their hearts. Hold them in love. Then release your connection. And I know that everyone has come across websites like that, even YouTube videos, which are, you know, about, you know, the dark side of what's going on our planet. And I really recommend for people, as you say, to have discernment in, as they're not only watching movies and television, but also, as we're discussing on this program, in what, how you're surfing the Internet and what you're looking at and what you're reading and how it's affecting you, to be aware of your internalness as you're just buzzing around, hopping from sites, seeing what's going on or whatever, or checking in. And also it comes across through personal communications. And Stephen, wouldn't you say that the aspect of just sending emails to someone through this you know, hyperdimensional internet, and I love to use that term, it's a more of a scientific term, because where is the internet? I always wonder, where the heck is this thing and where does it end? You know, it doesn't end. It's just, it goes on and on. It's like endless space or thought. And you can say that just like a thought, If we would understand how to project our thoughts, it really is really, the Internet is really just a mass projected thought. And in terms of the spiritual aspects, you may have heard the term Akashic Records. Right. So the Internet is sort of like a technological Akashic Records where you can access information. So it gives people the idea that, you know, if they tune inwardly, that we can access the same information, but it exists in a spiritual form, because the Internet is also a reflection of ourselves, which means it's a reflection of some other reality, whereas this knowledge base that's surrounding the Earth that so many spiritual masters and teachers and people like Edgar Cayce have talked about. Is that, I just want you to comment on that.
I think we're in agreement about that. I, you know, as you were speaking, I was thinking about the, you know, ability to question everything that we download. And there's a famous remark by Ram Dass, you know, Richard Alpert, when people were asking him about channeling, and he was pointing out that just because you made the connection to the other side doesn't mean that there's not a trickster waiting for you at the other end of the connection. So discernment, you know, discernment operates on the level both of who we connect to in the through the infosphere, through our information cloud, and who we connect to through our esoteric connections. You know, we must remember that this is a universe of light and shadow in all of its forms. The other piece is, and I will tell you personally, this is something I have been reflecting upon a great deal in the last year, which is the idea that everything I've ever said or communicated continues to live. And I know when you talk about Casey and others, the idea that we send out a thought form out into the universe, a curse, a negative thought, anger, these things continue to bubble. And so what we're finding on the Internet, of course, is everything that's ever happened or said can now be found. And everything that we've ever done that we want to forget about, including expunged court records that are now being posted, even though in theory they were sealed. What is it really like to be naked in one's history in front of everyone else, which is really giving us all a terrible headache, about, you know, oh my God, I said that. And your point about email, it seems to me, is that we're beginning to understand that every email, every text message sent is archived somewhere. And for many of us, that now means think about what we're saying. Well, let's take that into all the other aspects of our life. Because as you just said, we are creating and building these Akashic records of our own karma for everything that we've ever said and everything that we've ever thought. And again, mystics have said this for thousands of years. No one got it. Here we are. We've created a technology that allows, you know, law enforcement to go back and pull, you know, inappropriate text messages of, you know, the mayor of Detroit and others gotten themselves in trouble, Bill Clinton, you know, email messages, whatever.
Right.
This is a part of our daily life now. And what an amazing thing to operate in a place that reminds us that there's consequences for everything that we say. And, you know, I'm still learning it.
Yeah, and that we're all accountable for everything we say.
Right.
Everything we say and do across the Internet.
You know, and again, you know, I remember reading some of these transcendent teachings about the, you know, thought forms and the things we create and the idea that, you know, everything we've ever said is out there. And, you know, it sounded pretty esoteric. And now we're living in a place where we've made it tangible.
Right. I don't want to get too far off in this program before we get to the end here. I want you to mention some of the other things that you do beyond the technology piece, because there's a link on your website that says energy work. And that's one of the other things is, of course, we have all this other aspect of our lives, the spiritual aspect of our lives. Just go through a little bit about what energy awareness healing is and how people can use it and how they can work with it. It's one of the links on your site.
Well, think about the question we just started talking about awareness in general. And I have been trained in a number of modalities of energy healing work, which really is primarily around centering myself, moving into a deeper level of awareness and connection with a client or a partner doing this work, and asking, in effect, to go out to the edge of my energetic field and from that place, from that protected place, ask to begin to receive the impressions and the messages being held by and sent out through the energy field of someone else. And from that place, acting really primarily as a mirror in being able to direct the awareness of the client, let's say, to, well, what is that quality, the core metaphor that you're feeling sitting at your heart? Or what is that, you know, I'm sensing a cloud or a dark, congealed energy in this part of your body or out in your field. Let's go there together. Let's go there together and taste it and smell it and sense it and feel it and really stay with that that experience together to see what doors it opens, what piece of one's karma, what piece of one's personal physical, emotional, spiritual experiences are being held there. And this idea that, just as we were talking about the network holding all the information, a belief that the body's energy field, and in particular the chakras, which one can think of them as the nerve ganglions or the lymph nodes of the body's energy field, hold the both positive and negative experiences of one's life at those vibrations or at those frequencies. So, you know, my own, you know, you asked me at the beginning of the program about writing the book. Again, what for me was my core wake-up moment was, you know, this idea of being trained, you know, on my weekends and evenings to understand this vocabulary of energy, the vocabulary of frequency and vibration, the idea that everything is a creation of consciousness and that we create mirrors around us to reflect our own path back to us, and then realizing that I was doing that same thing in my own life, in my daytime work in communications. And so the joy for me was beginning to try to say to my spiritual friends that we have a vocabulary through the technology world of communication that's actually in harmony with some of the teachings we've been learning. And trying to reach out to my technology buddies and say, you know, you may not even be fully conscious of the things that we're working with, but actually these are pretty mystical ideas if you step out of your small frame into the larger frame and just play with this idea of how we've evolved our communication systems.
Right. I want to get into sort of where things are at and where things are going into the future in the last 15 minutes
sure.
or so of this program. And jump ahead to the idea of teleconsciousness, the unity of self and cosmos. It's the seventh level, Digital Dharma, Chapter 7. And I want to read from the beginning of that chapter. You say, seventh level communications takes us directly into the realm of the divine, into non-local awareness that extends from the individual to the vast archetypal database of content that is quantum mind. In personal transformational terms, that is the rarefied place sought by all mystics, unity, the simultaneous experiencing of the knower and the known, the divine expression of lover and the beloved. Its literal down-to-earth reflection in the social-political values sphere is Gaia consciousness, seeing the world as a dynamic organism comprised of living systems that mesh and blend. Out in the infosphere, we call it pervasive computing. Go a little bit further into that idea of what pervasive computing is.
Yeah, I, you know, this is one case where if there was a second edition, I'd probably add a few more things to it. So, thanks for the opportunity to play a little bit at that seventh level.
Okay.
You know, if we follow the idea of dual consciousness, of really holding both individual awareness and fully simultaneously consciousness of the whole, of all of humanity, and once we do all of humanity, why not go into all living things, and beyond that, all galaxies, all time, right? You know, all experience, and holding that kind of mind-blowing unity, it's all the great thought of consciousness of the divine, and our individual awareness. And not just leaving our individual awareness and heading off into the ether, which is sort of the, you know, the yogi finding enlightenment and never coming off the mountain, but more closer to my personal Sufi practice, where our teachers have said you go up to the mountain and then you come back down and you live your life in the world holding this awareness, that the technologies that we're creating right now to solve the really complex, massive problems that we're facing have within them some of this very same dual consciousness idea. So pervasive computing or cloud computing, if one reads the technical journals, is really around how could we harness millions upon millions of computing processors spread out all over the place, to do what no one computer can handle. So the idea of the mesh or the grid or the cloud as holding all of the software, all of the programs, all of the processing power that we then learn how to tap in and out of as needed is what is the future of IBM, is investing millions and billions into this stuff. This is really the next wave of, you know, where Microsoft is worried it's going to be put out of business because it's the power is moving to the cloud and not the software and the operating system, is really a parallel to consciousness holding both our individual awareness and our full spiritual awareness at the same time. And I see it in cloud computing, which is enabling us to begin to process approaches to global warming, monitoring the conditions of the Earth, dealing with lashing together, as they say, multiple intelligences, in this case computing intelligences, but that's what we're trying to do in our own in Sangha, right, in our communities, of bringing together multiple consciousnesses, aligning them on a common goal and transforming reality. So we do it on a personal level, on a public technology level. I see it manifested both in the cloud computing and actually bringing us back to the beginning of the show in what's happening with things like Twitter and ambient awareness, where we're creating an environment now where we expect to give every living thing, and in some cases every non-living thing, a voice. So we're putting sensors in the bridges so they don't collapse. We're putting sensors in the soil to know exactly how much to water them. We're putting sensors in the ocean floor. All of this data pouring in, too much for any one computer or any one individual to process. And we're doing two things with it. We're creating distributed computing to process it, and we're creating new interfaces that take all this data that's, again, too complicated to see in a chart or a spreadsheet, and creating new visual forms, almost artwork, that represent the sum of these processes, so that there are devices, ambient devices, that take millions of inputs, and knowing that human consciousness can't read the millions of inputs, create something else, colors, shapes, sounds, smells, that we can understand. And I like to think that that's really what God is doing with us, right? We have these millions of data points called individual human beings and animals and the like, thinking they're separate, but are really engaged in this massive computing project to create forms of consciousness that reflect the divine back to the divine, which is the purpose of humanity, I think.
Right. Well, I want to get your opinion on this. You mentioned this idea of cloud computing or grid computer networks, and I'm familiar with especially the one that started back in 1999. You mentioned that on page 146 about the SETI project, search for extraterrestrial intelligence and people. Basically, at the end of 2006, the SETI project participants had cumulatively logged 2.7 million years of computing time. So this gives you some idea of the power of these clouds or grid networks, as Stephen's describing them. What do you see? You mentioned this move away into this aspect of cloud computing. What do you see as some of the possible future technological inventions that may be on the horizon that may be coming up here in maybe the next 10 to 20 years? It's just like 10 to 20 years ago, we didn't have cell phones. What do you see as some of the possible inventions that may come out of the whole, technology spectrum?
Well, I like to look at what the artists are doing, and they often give us some ideas of where the next wave of consciousness is shifting. And I'm very fascinated with the participatory creation where right now, again, it's sort of a little awkward where people are coming together and maybe watching a film clip, but they are their brain scans are being monitored as a group, and the outcome of that story or the outcome of that music that's being created or the form that's being created is actually being manipulated by the people who are observing it, so that the observer and the creator become closer together. And I think that one of the things I think we'll see first in the arts and then later in other forms is faster and faster ways for group consciousness to manifest creatively, being actually able to design works of art, design technical things that we're not even familiar with yet, through a form of technology-mediated entrainment. So when we try to get people together, you know, we do creativity experiments and getting folks together to chant or to do wazifa or kirtan or meditate together to align themselves as a community to then bring forth some creative output. I think we'll begin to see that played out through things by coupling people together creatively on the internet. And that's almost that transition right now from, if you remember the video game on the Wild Divine, where one had to meditate or bring their heart rate down to have certain things happen in the video game. And now those folks are trying to figure out how they can do that by having groups online, mentally together, align themselves. And I think we'll see that with some of these Wii devices, right? Where instead of just playing with somebody online, that we will connecting various sensors and intention through the internet and then through the spiritual internet, make these connections and start manipulating the things that we create together. And I'm actually excited about that.
Yeah, I am too. I would I want to read from page 152 because I want to jump a little bit farther just for fun into the sort of the science fiction aspect of technology and consciousness. And on
yeah,
that
you can help me with that.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, let's go there because, you know, I write in those areas myself. So
yes.
We talk about Matthew Fox mentions in his one of his books, he talks about the seventh chakra, which is our connection to, you know, the ultimate or the beyond. He says the seventh chakra is like a beacon or searchlight that extends into the heavens and into the past, our ancestors, and the future, our descendants, to make community happen. The seventh chakra puts forth the light aroused in our being and searches for the light, glory, or wisdom in others, or doxa. There's another word if people are familiar with it. Indeed, it is light meeting light. And as everyone knows, that the whole digital infosphere and technology is basically pulses of light. And so if we think about that, I think that at some point in the future, this is just a funny little idea I have, at some point in the future, it may be that we create enough of a web and the web becomes interlaced enough and intricate enough where we are connected to each other. And just like the 100th monkey effect, there will be a breakthrough where we will connect and open a doorway into something far more wonderful and farther beyond the technology that may now be accessible without the technology.
Well, I agree. And I think people have asked me, oh, what's the technology that's going to be invented? Or, oh, you're a technology guru and promoter of technology. And I'm saying the technology is a metaphor. The technology is a dim mirror to the networks that we are building through our spirit and through our psychic intention. So I couldn't agree with you more. I'm suggesting that the vision of what those networks could look like, we can start by looking at the technologies of communication and then multiply them exponentially and say, all right, now we no longer need the crutch of moving electricity or physical light because we can move the light of our own being. And the, you know, it's told in the Kabbalah about how, you know, perfection was broken into 10,000 fragments, and our work on the planet is to pull all these fragments together, these fragments of individual souls or individual consciousness, to return to the vessel that can hold the divine light. Well, I think you've nailed it. You know that our work, this hunger, this longing for communication, is to form the grid Well, let's think about a grid as a weaving. My wife's a professor of design and textiles, and we've been talking about weaving and the metaphor of the web. Weaving this container that's strong enough to hold enough divine light to go to our next level of consciousness, our next level of evolution.
Well, thanks so much, Stephen. I really appreciate having you on the show today, everyone. Check out my website, spiritoffilm.net, or you can go to srvedra.com, Stephen's site. The link is right off of Spirit of Film. We've been talking with Stephen Vedra, author of Digital Dharma. Stephen, thanks so much for being on the show today.
I had a great time. Thanks for that great question.
Well, everyone, that's a wrap for our show for this week. And join us again next week as we showcase the very best in both conversations about media and movie entertainment that inspires us towards positive change and honors the belief that simple choices can change the world. Thanks to our engineers today. And, of course, you can find out more about Spirit of Film Conversations at spiritoffilm.net. And please tell your friends where to find our program right here on SeventhWaveNetwork.com. And remember, you are the writer, producer, director, and star of your own movie that's called your life. So make it a blockbuster, and it'll be a classic. Until next time, I'm Randall Abaro for Spirit of Film Conversations. We'll see you next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.